cancer diagnosis at the age of 32, my mom and I talked a lot about the shock of that diagnosis, given several doctors told us you're too young to have endometrial cancer. After much discussion, we began to feel driven to inform and help educate other young women about what symptoms they should be concerned.
Having both been teachers, it seemed natural for us to look for a way to share Alex's cancer journey in order to help other young women avoid such a shocking diagnosis or possibly navigate a similar path. A podcast seemed the best way to get the word out, and that's how Down There Aware was born.
4 years later, our mother-daughter duo has gone from educating and informing to advocacy and action, with a fresh and sometimes very interesting and somewhat humorous multi-generational perspective.
We look forward to sharing with you season 4 as we advocate, take action, and make it a priority to always be
Down There Aware.
Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware. We're here a little earlier in the week than normal. We normally release episodes on Thursday. But today's episode is a little bit different, and we thought getting it out faster might be prudent. Is that the right word?
I was just going to say prudent.
Oh, wow.
My goodness.
Ooh, you'll also notice that we've switched chairs, and that's just for vanity reasons.
Well, for easy on the eyes, too, because my white hair was just like a glowing snowball over close to the window.
And I am a millennial who parts my hair this way, not down the middle, so my face is always covered. Yeah. So anyway.
We're always pushing that.
Yeah. So we're trying it out. We'll see how it goes.
Does my hair look like a snowball?
Add your comments below. Let us know.
Or maybe don't.
we don't need to read that. So if you are alive in America today, you have heard over the last couple days that Hank Green, science extraordinaire, has been diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma.
And Hank Green is the brother of...
I was just going to say.
Sorry.
It's okay, but go ahead.
The brother of John Green, who you talked about...
Last episode.
And before this all happened.
Right, and I was struggling to find the name of one of his books, which was Looking for Alaska, which we put in our show notes last week. But the most famous book he ever wrote... Why didn't I think about it? He wrote Fault in Our Stars.
Hello.
And he was, funny aside, he was an extra in the movie, but it got cut.
Oh. didn't have that much pull.
Right. Anyway, so we thought that having had cancer, having had a daughter and mother-in-law and sisters and brothers and other people who've had cancer, we thought we would react to Hank's video and just talk about some things that he brought up and thought were poignant, in his expression of his diagnosis to his community. And then I think we'll also talk about content creators in general, and because that's something that I want to touch on just in terms of what they owe us. So let's kick it off with one of the, who's telling the story about the diagnosis, and he talks about how the doctor said, it's probably nothing, but we'll send you for a test.
Whoa, have we heard that?
And how many times have we said that on this podcast, that we constantly hear doctors say, oh, it's not a big deal, and some doctors even say, it's not a big deal, we don't need to test for it, come back in a couple months, whatever. But his doctor, and we learn later why, I think, was very forward-thinking and saying, we'll get it tested,
I do think doctor, and, I'm not a doctor, but I'm kind of guessing, the reason they say those things, they think it puts you at ease.
Mm-hmm.
They think it gives you some kind of comfort. And maybe some people it does.
Yeah.
For me, it gives me false hope. I would rather know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think they need to give you doom and gloom.
I think if they just said, this is something that makes me want to test further.
Yeah, or this could be a lot of different things. We need another test, or we need a test to determine what that is.
Yeah, but to say, and in your case, the doctor said to me, this isn't cancer.
Yeah.
She's too young to have this kind of cancer.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a little bit different than Hank's story, but it's similar in that it's this false sense of security. You don't have to worry about that. Don't worry about the big C word. It's not the big of a deal. And even if his doctor didn't know that it was cancer or didn't even suspect that it was cancer, the fact that they wanted further testing, that's all that should be said.
Yeah. And clearly that didn't bother Hank.
No.
He shared a whole lot, but he didn't share that was worrisome for him. So, you know, that's a good thing. We're just kind of responding to how we...
Well, in our own experiences how similar they are to his. Yeah. And it's interesting to hear someone who, you know, I've watched for years and to go through that similar experience, that similar life experience.
Mm-hmm.
So he touches on the speed of the American healthcare system, and that's something that I want to dig into. I don't know a lot about compared to other countries, and he didn't talk about compared to other countries. All he said was, I'll put in a clip so you can hear it.
And then I took the order for the surgery and like the paperwork down to the surgery office. And I, like, gave it to the woman at the window, and she's like, ooh, hand delivery. And I was like, well, yeah, the surgery is tomorrow. And she's like, oh, procrastinator. And I was like, well, no, it just got scheduled just now. And then her eyes changed. It's like when you're in the American healthcare system, you don't expect things to move quick. Like, that's not what it does. That's not what it looks like. And then when it starts to get a little bit efficient... it's actually quite disconcerting. I've seen that so many times, and it doesn't look like that. What's happening right now? It's like seeing a horse that has hands. It's just not... That's very upsetting. Like, it's good. I'm glad everybody's taking things seriously right now, but holy... So her eyes change, and it's like seeing a flight attendant on a plane that's in the air running down the aisle. Like, that can't be good. Either somebody or everybody's having a very bad day. Because I don't know all the noises a plane makes, and I don't know all the ways that the healthcare system works, but you do, and you look like something is weird.
So as you can see, he says, you know, the American healthcare system, it's kind of shocking when it moves quickly, and it gives you reason, cause for concern, and especially, and I love his analogy of the flight attendant, of how...
Yes, I think that's a perfect analogy.
The flight attendant... knows the plane, and if they are concerned, you should also be concerned.
Yeah.
And so he put that into perspective of, you know, the healthcare providers and that they are in healthcare, so they know.
Well, and I do see, I have seen this lag a lot of times in our healthcare system. And specifically, your dad just had a biopsy done almost 3 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and still has not heard anything.
And even had the dermatologist call to reschedule an appointment just benignly and didn't mention the...
Well, I'm sure that was the scheduling desk.
Sure, yeah. But...
But he didn't ask.
Right, and so, but having... There was a contact made with that office,
yeah.
and there wasn't anything in the notes of, like, let him know his biopsy is still not in yet, or let him know, you know.
Yeah, now in his mind, he said, well, no news is good news. I'm sure there's no problem. In my mind, I want to know.
Right.
You know, why does it take 3 weeks?
Yeah. Especially when mom had her mammogram last week and next day had results.
The next day I had a digital report on my mammogram, by the way, it was fine. No issues at all.
Mm-hmm.
The next day I was flabbergasted. And she did say to me, you'll receive a digital, you know, make sure you're on the portal. You'll receive a digital report. And I think she said 2 or 3 days, which is smart of her.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next day I was shocked and really happy. And I thought, wow, this is great. You know, digital stuff is miraculous. But anyway... We have seen the lag in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Sadie.
So there may be a future episode on that, because it is fascinating to me of, compared to other countries, where do we stand? Because we see a lot of, specifically politically, people on both sides of the aisle comparing the American healthcare system to other healthcare systems in the world. And so, you know, where really do we shake up? So again, just kind of makes me go, I want to know more about that. And he, you know, goes into he doesn't really go into the difference between Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but does talk about how Hodgkin's is very treatable, one of the most treatable diseases. I looked at the survival rate, and I think the 10-year survival rate is over 95%, which is astounding for cancer.
Yeah.
So those are all good things. One thing that Mom noticed is that Hank and I share a bad habit of smiling.
I don't know that it's a bad habit.
Well, it's a habit of smiling while talking about terrible things.
Well, and I have done a little research about that, and what I've read is it's that person's response to a trauma or bad news in trying to downplay it in their own mind, trying to downplay the severity or...
I mean, that fits with me.
It fits with you.
Yeah.
I always notice it, probably because I see it in Alex, that people with this big grin on their face are laughing and chuckling about something really terrible. And maybe somebody, and I kind of get this sense with Hank that I'm acting like I know him, but from what I've seen, that he just has been as positive about this as anybody I've seen. And that's just kind of who he is.
Yeah. Well, and he gets into later in the video about how he is, he doesn't want people to think that he's not processing this on a deep emotional level, but publicly to his subscribers and to the world, because every news station has picked this up. Entertainment Weekly, CNN, New York Times, like everybody's picked this up. And so he's managing what he's putting out there.
Yeah.
And he's doing the internal heavy grieving with himself and his family and close friends, which I think is super healthy.
Well, and he said, because it's so hard.
Right.
And good for him for being able to process it and figure out what he wants to make public and what he wants to keep private and in having control over that.
Yeah. One of the things, and I'm just going to insert the clip because I can't say it better than him, about the difference between, because he's super sciencey, the difference between blood cancers and solid mass tumor cancers.
Yeah, great educational opportunity here.
Yeah,
great.
So listen to this.
It seems likely that we caught mine early. I'm still waiting on a scan to sort of confirm that. But even when it's not super early, even when it's in multiple parts of the body, Hodgkin's is super treatable. Like solid mass tumors, like lung cancer, prostate cancer, to figure out how to live somewhere else in the body is like a really big leap for them. It means that they've changed and they've evolved and they've got like a bunch of new strategies for survival, which is why metastasis in solid cancers is a really big deal. This is a blood cancer, so it's a cancer of the immune cells, the lymphocytes, and so they are already all over the body. Other parts of the body are like, hey, yo, that you're fine here. Whereas, like, prostate cells in the lungs would normally get attacked, and so prostate cancer cells in the lungs means that they've developed a whole set of new strategies. Lymphoma cells don't have to do that, so it doesn't mean something super bad if lymphoma has spread. It's worse. For clarity. But it's not the same giant gap between like stage 1 and stage 4 with lymphoma as it is with solid mass tumors.
That's crazy.
Well, and such a layman's explanation, you know?
Right.
Everybody listening to him isn't sciencey.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but I understood it.
Yeah, really easy to understand and enlightening. You know, I've always talked about being a lifelong learner and I love learning new things. So thank you for that.
Well, and just I wouldn't say we're necessarily in the like cancer healthcare space, but as like decision makers or whatever, but like we're in that community. We're constantly surrounded by cancer and treatment and research and whatever. And I had never seen that.
No, I've never heard it explained that way, so
mm-hmm.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, and it does make me wonder, like, he's a very intelligent, super science. I mean, like, if you watch any of his stuff, you know that he is really great at explaining it on layman's terms, whether it's from space or medicine or any other field in science. But I wonder if he knew that because he's so sciencey.
Oh.
Or if after the diagnosis, he went in even further. And he does mention in the video that he has a good friend who had Hodgkin's lymphoma 10 years ago and is effectively cured of it.
Yeah, he's been through the chemo and recovery.
And so does Hank know about it from that experience, prior experience? Or anyway, just these things that I'm like, how did he know that? Did he research it for this video to talk about it? I don't know. One of the more interesting things, again, that I didn't know were the risk factors he had.
Wow, that blew me away.
For lymphoma. And so he lists, he is on certain medications that, you know, make him more likely to get this. He had mononucleosis as a child. And he has an autoimmune disease. He has ulcerative colitis. So all of those things factor in.
Yeah, I never would have guessed any of that.
No.
But doesn't it make sense? He starts the video talking about he realized his lymph nodes were enlarged.
And he immediately sought a professional.
Exactly. So he knew he had risk factors, and he was aware.
Yep.
Haven't we talked about being aware
of your risk factors?
And knowing your body, and boy, look, it got him right in.
Yeah, and, you know, he didn't name the medication he's on, so I'm not going to speculate about that, but aside from the medication he's taking, the other two were things he really couldn't control. Mm-hmm. He has an autoimmune disease, and he got mono as a kid. And so how many people do you know that have had mono?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, that just kind of fascinated me that he knew the risk factors and was that something that he did research for when his friend got lymphoma? Mm. Or did a doctor say, you have risk factors for, you know, thyroid cancer, or not thyroid cancer, lymphoma, you need to look into this, you know, be aware?
Yeah, and doesn't it make you think about, how information is disseminated, how often and how much information gets out there, because we're going to talk about in another episode how younger and younger people are getting colon cancer and how there are specific risks to look for early, symptoms to look for early. And so why don't we have this information out there? Is it maybe we don't want to catastrophize it? We don't want people to go, oh, I had mono. Now I have lymphoma,
right.
You know. I don't know how much information needs to be out there.
Yeah. I'm of the perspective that more information is important.
Me too.
And I would rather have more information. And there are even studies of, not to take this on a left turn, but there are studies about if asking someone if they've thought about suicide when you're having a conversation and they feel depressive and they're expressing feelings that they haven't quite gotten there, if my asking the person, do you feel like harming yourself, there have been studies of, does it plant that in their mind?
Mm.
And would that cause someone to then go harm themselves? And all the studies have shown that no, it has no impact on it, that the knowledge of self-harm and the introduction of that thought from an outside source is not of caring, right? A caring source. It has no impact on that person. If they're going to self-harm, they've already thought about it and they're already going to do it. And so in this case, I think it's kind of, not as drastic, but kind of the same thing of, wouldn't it be important every child who gets mono to sit down with their parents and say, just so you know, it's still a rare chance, and give numbers, but this does put your child later in life at higher risk of coming down with having Hodgkin's lymphoma or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah, and just be aware.
Just be aware.
These are some things you can look for, enlarged lymph nodes.
Right.
You know, clearly, Hank was informed,
mm-hmm.
and it it really benefited him in a big way.
No, it absolutely did.
I'm just going to come out and say it. The first half of that video did not have good audio because something happened with the microphones. But we're back and the mics are set, so you should be having some good audio now. But I wanted to shift into, so that was all the science, diagnosis, all that kind of stuff. But the last part of the video, he talks about the psychological effect of having a cancer diagnosis, as well as family and friends and things like that. And so I thought it was interesting that he thought it was important enough to point out, because I think a lot of people don't think about it. When you get a diagnosis like that, and he's going to have to go through chemo, you know, he is for months going to, this is going to be his job. And he talked about the practicalities and logistics of a cancer diagnosis. Who to tell, how to tell, when to tell, you know, all of those kinds of things that now you have to think about that you never thought you would need to.
Yeah. And we went through a little bit of that. And you sort of set me straight about how this was your story to tell. And it helped me understand your perspective, but I also said to you, I need a tribe as your mother, the mother of a daughter who has cancer. So there are people I need to tell.
And I understood that, but I also, from history, knew that anytime I was in the hospital, it was on Facebook, and anytime, and I'm not complaining about that. It's how you got the word out. And we have a meticulous record of hospitalizations and things like that as a result of that. And it's an easy way to get the word out, right?
Yeah, I have friends and family all over the country.
Exactly. And so I understood that. However, because of the kind of cancer I had and because of the suddenness of the diagnosis and the suddenness of, diagnosed on Tuesday, first appointment on Friday, hysterectomy on Tuesday, a week later, I needed some time to process. And I wanted to tell personal friends first.
And I listened to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so, but it was having that conversation of...
Yeah, we needed to have the conversation.
Yeah, we did.
I needed to hear your perspective.
Yeah. But I thought it was interesting that he did point out, like, there's a lot of just logistical secretarial things that have to happen.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think we always think about those kinds of things.
Right. But. Yeah. And like I said, just a minute ago, he, you know, said this is his job now for a little bit, just getting healthy, going through this process. And he said some of the advice that he's gotten is to take one day at a time. And I thought this was interesting, to feel no obligation to do anything. Yeah.
And do the things you can and you want to do, but don't feel obligated.
Yeah.
And I did think it was interesting. He said everybody he talked to said, this is your job. Now this is what you have to consider your job.
And, you know, talking to people who had been through it and all of that, and just having that, I think it's comforting to have that reassurance of giving yourself that grace of, okay, this is my job. I'm not going to be able to. And he talks about, you know, in terms of the content he's creating. I mean, if you follow him or if you watch any of his stuff, he's making videos on multiple YouTube channels. He's on all kinds of platforms and doing all kinds of things. That takes a lot of time. And so he said, I know you'll understand, but I'm going to take a step back from that. And as a result, John will probably take a step back from that because they tag team in their content. But that made me think, do we have too high expectations of content creators? Because in the way he said it, and other people have done this too, this is not just him, but in saying, I know you'll understand, but I'm not going to be getting content out as regularly. And it's like, do you owe me that? Do you owe me content once a week?
I think some people probably feel like...
I think they do too.
That people who create content, I think there are people out there who have those expectations. And, you know, years ago I read a book, It's Not About Me, or It's Not About You. I'll look that up and put it. But meaning it, yeah. You know, it's not about you.
It's just started raining.
It's about Sadie.
It's about Sadie. But I also think that, you know, particularly after the pandemic. So during the pandemic, I consumed much more content creator, influencer type media, because those were the people who were able to create media mm-hmm. in their living rooms and put it out without going out into the world and things like that. And so it came to be an expectation. And as people walked back, once the pandemic kind of eased up and people were going out into the world, and so they didn't have time to daily vlog or create weekly videos or whatever. And so they were stepping it back, and I felt myself be like, oh man, there's not a video this week. Mm. And it was like, I had to actively and consciously say, okay,
it's not about you.
It's not about like, why do they owe me that? First off, it's free content.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I watch an ad here and there and they get that, the ad revenue and per view. I don't know all the details on YouTube,
but it's free
like,
to you,
but it's free to me. I don't pay for YouTube, you know? And so, it just, I think it opens up much larger and much longer conversation of content creators and what they owe us.
Yeah. And the expectation of them. But he handled it well, I think.
I think
he addressed
too.
It at the mm-hmm. beginning and
yeah.
was very kind about it, but very pointed. This is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing he was really pointed about, which I thought was really great, was that he gave very specific requests.
And he called them requests.
He called them requests.
And I really appreciated that.
And essentially he was setting boundaries.
Yeah.
He never said subscribers. He never said followers. He never said anything that would put people below him.
Mm-hmm.
But he said the community.
Yeah.
This community. And he gave good reason. So one of the things he said was he doesn't need healthcare advice. And I think that that's such a big thing, because you get those Sunday morning quarterbacks who are Monday morning quarterbacks who are, or armchair quarter, whatever it is, who are, you know, on their computers putting in comments like, oh, have you done this? Or my aunt had, you know, yeah. whatever, 10 years ago and this, that, and the other. And he simply stated, I have a great healthcare team. I have friends and acquaintances and family members who are supporting me and giving me their advice. And this community is just too large.
And that's a huge point,
right,
I think.
That it would be overwhelming to him.
Yeah.
And he kept bringing it back to not, because I could see in another world with another creator saying, I don't need your healthcare advice. You guys are hippy dippy.
Keep it to yourself.
Keep it to yourself. I don't need to know about, like, he could have spun it in a much uglier way. That's not Hank. But he was very positive in just saying that would be overwhelming for me because there are so many in this community.
And he's even said, I'm sure it's all well-meaning.
Yep.
But you know,
mm-hmm.
and good to put it out there at the onset.
Yeah. And I, one thing that I really just felt a kinship with him was when he said, I'm not a, quote, let's fight this thing together kind of guy. And I'm the same way. And he said he believes that his prognosis is down to good science, good healthcare, a good outlook and attitude, and simply chance. And so he and I are kind of in that same thing of like, I'm not going to like get a team and rally around me. And like that doesn't make me feel better. It does make other people feel better.
Yeah,
and some people need that. But good for him to recognize who he is and be able to express that to such a large community.
Express it very well.
Yeah. Some of the other things that really kind of stuck out to me were, him saying that he has always wanted to be the goofy science guy, and now this identity of the cancer guy has been thrust upon him, and that he now has to accept this.
Yeah. And why don't you respond to that personally about...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. You know, you go through life knowing who you are and developing who you are, deciding who you are, and then you have things thrust upon you that... you know, you have zero control over. And he talked about control as a spectrum and things you have total control over and things you have no control over. And his life is shifting to the not having control. And that it's really hard to feel like you don't have control and you just have to let go. And that's what he said. He's like, I just have to let go of that part of it. I can't live in the dread or whatever of being, you know, having this thrust upon me.
Well, you, sometimes your identity becomes the person with cancer.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to.
And that's annoying, really, you know, because it feels like that's all you are.
Mm-hmm.
But he even goes on to say, I can be both.
Yeah.
And I can be
that
both.
Was smart.
It was. Yeah. And one thing that he said that I thought was really poignant, he said, things that you're no longer in control over, and going into that, it becomes a thing to grieve. And I think we don't talk enough about grief in terms of grieving the person you've lost, or, you know, because you're no longer a person who's never had cancer.
Yeah.
You're never going to be that person.
So you lost that.
So that is a loss in your life.
That's an interesting perspective.
And so going through the grief process of all of that, you know, acceptance and denial and all of those other things. So I thought that was interesting. And he had a really good quote about friendships. He said he's very fortunate in that and very grateful because the time invested in friendships has been joyful in the moment and wise in the long term.
I do love that.
Yeah. Because, you know, and he expounds in there to talk about how friendships are hard. There are times where it's really challenging to stay in touch with people, whether that's, you know, life circumstances or whatever.
It takes a lot of effort.
It takes a lot of effort and energy. But the joy that you get of having friends in the moment, but in the long term, you have a team around you. You have a community around you. And, you know, even if you never get a cancer diagnosis, something's going to happen that you're going to need, you know, your cheerleaders for. And so I thought that was a really kind of standout.
Well, and I have seen that play out in my tribe, my community. People who've gone through certain things are oftentimes when others rally around them, you can see in their past how they rallied around other people. Yeah. And so the love they put out there comes back to them tenfold.
Yeah.
And I've seen that over and over and over again.
And the people who expect nothing in return.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They don't put it out there in order to get it back.
Exactly.
They put it out there because that's who they are.
Right. And so, you know, I just thought that was a really, really poignant thought. And, you know, he says, I'm fine, but I'm not fine.
Mm.
And anybody who has had cancer gets that, right? Like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm in this moment, I'm fine.
Well, and he even said, I feel fine. You know, I know
in the future I won't.
Yes. And chemo's going to be really hard and I'm going to feel terrible. But right now I feel fine. And, you know, we as a society, we refer to cancer as the big C. Yeah. And oftentimes people don't even want to say the word because it is so scary.
Yeah.
But he even talks about chemo and how it's just putting poison in your body. And the more, you just have to keep putting more poison in.
And that it's effective. It works.
Yeah.
And so he, I think his science background really serves him well in that regard.
I think so too.
He understands what his cancer is on a cellular level, and he understands the only way to fight it is this. And he understands that there are side effects of that. However, this is still the best way to do it.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I did think it was funny that he threw in there because of John's, what's the right word?
Passion for
eradicating the world of tuberculosis, that lymphoma was once thought to be a form of tuberculosis. And so he said, see, John, everything comes down to tuberculosis.
Well, and didn't we just talk about last week the ever-changing medical community?
Yep.
And I never knew that lymphoma once was thought to be a form of tuberculosis.
And isn't it interesting that, I don't remember what year he talked about, but it was in the early 1900s that this, you know, was thought to be a form of TB. And isn't it interesting that in just 100 years' time, it has become, we've identified it properly as a form of cancer, and we've also made it one of the most treatable cancers and survivable cancers.
So the ever-changing medical community, it's a great thing that it's ever-changing.
It's so important. And the last thing that I thought was really interesting was he acknowledged that while, yes, this diagnosis sucks the most for him, obviously it's his diagnosis, he also acknowledged that it sucks for his whole community because even though people can be gracious and not be ugly about certain things, he's not going to be putting out as much content as he was, and things are going to change in the community, and it does impact. And, you know, I think, I don't know that everybody can relate to this, but my generation and younger, I think, really can, that you feel a sort of kinship to, even if you've never met someone, you've only watched them online, you feel a sort of kinship because they've opened their lives to you and you have seen them go through. I mean, there's one content creator I watch who, when I first started watching her, I really started watching her because we're about the same age and she was a single 30-something female, and just kind of watching her story, and we're both into musical theater, things like that. But in the course of the last few years, she's gotten married, had one baby, had a set of twins, and, you know, and so, like, I feel like I've gone through that with her and gone through all of the, her twins were in the NICU for a long time, but just things like that. And so he acknowledged that it sucks for everyone. And then he said, and I feel like apologizing, even though that is so stupid.
Yeah.
But it's true that we have this inherent, like, if something's not right, even though it's not our fault, we just feel like we need to apologize. And we don't. You don't need to apologize that you got a cancer diagnosis. You're going to be taking time off for work. You're going to be focusing on you. You're going to take a step back from other responsibilities and clubs or organizations that you're a part of.
Then all the things you
all
have
the things
to
you
do.
Have to do.
Yeah.
You know, your priority list completely gets flipped on its head. Mm. So, super interesting. You know, I'll be interested to continue watching Hank's progression of how things go. I'm sure we won't hear from him for a little while, but we wish him the best and know that cancer sucks. But we're grateful that he got a good cancer, as some people say, and that mostly grateful that he's in a community that is really supportive of him and is super knowledgeable of all this
and that
stuff.
He has such a great attitude and
really
has so much going for him.
And how impactful on all of the people who watch him and who watch John. And I mean, I just looked up his video of announcing this in 2 days, got 5.4 million views.
Wow.
So, and like I said earlier, it's been picked up on every major news network. The New York Times did a write up on it, Entertainment Tonight. So it's being broadly broadcast to a lot of different people. And I think people can learn from his experience of how accepting and understanding he was of his diagnosis and just kind of accepting it at face value as this is what we're doing, we're moving forward. But also acknowledging that there's an emotional component to it, and he's just not sharing that right now.
Yeah, and I've learned so much. I'll have to admit, I didn't know of Hank Green until you sent me the video, and I've done some research now, and I'm grateful to now know about him, know more about him, and have learned just from this 13-minute video all about what's going on with him and some science stuff. So I think that's important for him.
Yeah, it definitely is. So the takeaways I think are going to be far and widespread and great in their capacity of how impactful this can be for a lot of people. And maybe some people who had mono as a kid or yeah. who have sore lymph nodes or whatever are maybe going to get that checked out as a result because who knew?
He gave good information.
He gave really good information. And yeah. he's already a trusted source
yeah.
in that regard.
And we wish him well.
We do. So thanks for listening and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Down There Aware. Be sure to like and subscribe on our new YouTube channel, as well as on your favorite podcast platform. You can find us at Down There Aware on all social media sites, Twitter, Pinterest, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. If you have it, we're there at Down There Aware. You can learn more on our website, www.downthereaware.com, and always get in touch with us, downthereaware@gmail.com. See you next week.